You and I chatting it up again, round the wireless on Tuesday, August 26, 2025, on Connecticut Today, where I wondered out loud why so many progressives and those on the left have hostile attitudes toward billionaires, many of whom hire and provide good income and benefits for hundreds of thousands of Americans. Attorney and business analyst Parag Amin joined us to chat about a move by Southwest Airlines to have larger-sized passengers purchase two seats on some flights. And a Yankee Institute blogger, Megan Portfolio, detailed a possible legislative push coming against Connecticut's homeschooling parents and families.
I've always been fascinated at the way people look at wealth, right? I've always been fascinated at what kind of a visceral reaction people have, and also reactions after they think about something. If they see wealth, if they meet somebody who's really rich, if they, I don't know, see somebody driving a really nice car that, you know, in their present economic state, they could never afford, right? How many of us, for whatever reason, we drive just a garden variety mid-sized sedan that's fine, and then at a stop sign, I call it the stop sign test, right? You look over and you say, what's a set of, oh, look at that, man, new Bentley. Wow, I saw one the other day at Bentley. New Mercedes, they're really nice. New BMW, nice wheels. Boy, that guy or that gal is lucky. Or, right, you look over and you say, well, that son of a bee. I'm sure he had to cheat his way through life to get that car. Huh, I can't even afford an entry-level Mercedes. Or BMW. Or Audi, if there is such a thing. Screw him, right? And I know there are people that react to that. And I mention that because I think this is at the root of a lot of these protests we see. And there's a story I wanted to start out the show with today. We'll build on that as the show goes on. But also, it's the subject of our Facebook question of the day at facebook.com/voiceofct. I think it's a pretty interesting, if I do say so myself, or pretty pertinent question as we move through these Trump years. There are workers over billionaires, weekend protests, all scheduled throughout Connecticut, a couple of them in our area. I think there's one or two in Fairfield County. Workers over billionaires. So I ask you, does somebody being worth at least $1 billion bother you? And that, now, to most of us, I couldn't care less what anybody is worth unless they stole the money, unless there is proof that the money they have, the tens, the hundreds of millions, the billions, the tens of billions, the hundreds of billions. If you show me that that was accumulated largely on, I don't know, ill-gotten gains, maybe I have a problem with it. Maybe I do. But largely, I told you, I was taught from a very young age in a very Italian household, it's none of your business what somebody makes. You don't talk about what you make. You don't whisper about what they make and whatever, right? But yet, you know, you get Bernie Sanders out there with the billionaires and the left. You don't even just see it in D.C. You see it here in Connecticut, the billionaire left. That's a big Chris Murphyism now. The billionaires, they like to throw in the oligarchs, too. So Bernie's out there with the oligarchs and the billionaires. Billionaires, how he gets that extra syllable out. It's a thing of beauty. They're not billionaires. They're billionaires. That's what happens when you mix, you know, New York City and Vermont, Burlington and the Bronx. That's what you get. The billionaires. But having said that, I can somebody please explain to me the fascination here that the left has with billionaires and whether or not it actually bothers you? See, I think, as I read this story and set this question up to start the day, I think the vast majority of people couldn't care any less if they tried as to how much, you know, they always point to Jeff Bezos and they always point to Elon Musk and they always point to Carlos Slim out of Mexico. He's a big telecom guy. And they always point to geez, I don't know, Larry Ellison from Oracle. Is it, and the Walton family. I was just talking to somebody here in the station about, you know, what are the Waltons, the 9 or 10 Waltons that have a piece of Walmart? They're everywhere. And they're all worth several billion dollars. They should. And I've heard people say, well, nobody. Do you know Zohran Mamdani, for example, the guy running to destroy New York? Well, rhetorically, maybe. He doesn't think billionaires should exist. He said that on television. There shouldn't be billionaires. You agree with that or not? Does somebody being worth at least $1 billion ever bother you? I don't understand it. What's up with these people? I don't. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Workers over billionaires protest. Plan for Labor Day Monday in Connecticut. And again, Labor Day is the day that we celebrate organized labor and the labor movement. That's fine. That's whatever you want to celebrate or protest, that's fine. But I don't quite get, like, billionaires only appeared out of thin air when Trump got in office the first time, right? So I guess there were no billionaires at the time of Bill Clinton, no? There were no, you know, billionaires during the Obama years? No, I guess not. I guess Mr. Obama and Mr. Clinton, for, you know, whatever reason, did I miss the executive order outlawing billionaires? Honestly, protesters here, says in the Connecticut News Junkie, protesters and protests are expected to happen around the Capitol and across Connecticut Monday for Labor Day rallies across the state. The protests are called Workers Over Billionaires. They're part of a nationwide effort to bring together community members in support of constitutional values and opposition to authoritarianism. So wait a minute. Are we doing billionaires? Are we doing the Constitution? Are we doing authoritarian values? Is this just a leftist smorgasbord? I kid these people. God bless them. They're making their voices heard. But come on. Go to the phones on this momentarily. Rich and Company, hang on. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Look, at least during the Trump 2.0 time, we're getting these weekend protests, maybe that are, you know, seeding the ground for more billionaires. You got police, fire, maybe EMT making all this OT. Maybe that's good. Workers over billionaires protests. Plan for Labor Day in Connecticut. I'm asking a simple question here. Does somebody being worth at least $1 billion bother you? Why or why not? I couldn't care less. What if it's $100 billion, Paul, or $400 billion? I don't care. I don't understand why so many people care. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. There are Workers Over Billionaires weekend protests scheduled throughout Connecticut. Again, God bless people. I don't care if you want to protest. Just don't be violent. Scream and yell your cute little heads off. But I'm sitting here wondering, like, what is this anti-billionaire thing? I don't quite understand it. There's going to be one in Newtown, 8 a.m. on Labor Day, Monday, actually, in Newtown on Main Street. 11 a.m. at the Ruth Steinkraus Cohen Bridge in Westport. 11 a.m. on the town green in New Milford. So there you go. Just some in Fairfield County, lower and upper. I don't get the vitriol against billionaires. I don't. They tend to employ a lot of people. How many people do these politicos that bitch and moan about the billionaires, how many people they employ beyond their office staff? Huh? What do they contribute to the overall economy? Started out today on a Tuesday, Rich in Stratford. Rich, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Paul, I'm fine. You took the wind. I have 2 points.
Sure.
One is you just took the wind out of my sails, which I could care less about billionaires. And I was going to say that people with money, multimillionaires, billionaires, they keep the economy going.
Yeah.
It's trickle down. Somebody else is going to make a lot of money on them. So I have no problem with how much anybody makes, never did. And the second thing is, unfortunately, I'm driving.
No, that's all right. No. Safety first and Rich, while you straighten yourself out there on the road. I mean, I looked, for example, Rich, online before I started here today. Everybody says, Elon Musk shouldn't be worth the amount of money he is, this and the other. Elon Musk employs 267,000 people, Rich. Of course, he's going to be worth that kind of money.
It's just jealousy. That's what it is. And I would like to see, and I never did see it. I don't know how you get it.
Yeah.
They talk about the Democrats, and I was a Democrat for sure a long time ago.
Really?
But long story short,
yeah.
They talk about them being of the people. And how many billionaire and multimillionaire Democrats?
Oh, yeah.
There's always a list of the other guys. I'll bet you there's more. I bet you there's more on the Democratic side, but they know how to hide it, and they know how to hide behind we're for the people when they're richer than most people.
Yeah. So
I would like to see where I can dig a list up like that.
Yeah, I'll poke around for that, Rich, definitely.
Yeah, publicize it, because nobody hears it.
Yeah. Rich, thank you so much, Rich. Appreciate it. Yeah, and how about we ban trading? And I know there are Republicans against this and Democrats against this. I don't care. How about we completely ban stock trading while you're in Congress? That's it. You can't trade. You can have accounts. You got to put a freeze on those accounts, but I digress. So again, there's going to be workers over billionaires protest planned for over the weekend and particularly Labor Day in the state. And I mean, it just, you know, I read this and I said, well, good for these people getting out there. And again, just to give you the locales in our general area here, Main Street in Newtown, 8 a.m. on what's this, Monday? Yep, 8 a.m. Monday. Torrington and Co. Memorial Park, 11 a.m. The Ruth Steinkraus Cohen Bridge in Westport at 11 a.m. on Monday, the Town Green in New Milford, 11 a.m. on Monday, noon, the State Capitol in Hartford. So listen, but I mean, it's so tired. It is. Now, if you tell me that whomever was a 100 millionaire or a billionaire got their ill-gotten gains, all right, I'm all for you. And then people are going to call up and bitch and moan about the taxes. We'll change the tax code. Again, were there no billionaires during the Obama years? Well, 8 years of Barack Obama, were there no billionaires during the 8 years of William Jefferson Clinton? I don't think so. I think there were. Are there more now? Yeah, there might be more now. Where are they from? I'm pretty sure Larry Ellison at Oracle's making more money now than he was during the Obama years. I'm pretty sure Jeff Bezos, although he really doesn't run Amazon anymore, it's Andy Jaffe. I'm sure they're making more money. In the early days at Microsoft, Bill Gates, there's a story that when Microsoft, it had an extremely good day on the stock market one day, and I think I read this in Microsoft lore that something like by the end of X amount of time from point A to point B in Microsoft, people who were only paid in stock became like multimillionaires within a 2 or 3 week period. I mean, it happens. Elon Musk employs 267,000 people. Of course, he's probably going to be the world's most richest man. It's not only SpaceX, you know. It's SpaceX. It's Tesla, it's Neuralink, it's the Boring Company, not boring, but boring as in drilling. You didn't know about that, right? It's Starlink. So I don't get it. The progressive end of things, they want to beat Trump, they want to beat Republicans. Okay, stop stomping on wealth. Stop it. Well, you know, the taxes, then you know what? Change the tax code. elect people that'll change the tax code. But because if you don't change the tax code, guess what? You're coming up with a lot of hot air. All right, if you're a traveler, I don't travel that much. I haven't flown in a few years. Now, my son travels probably, 10, 15 times a year on business. A lot of folks, snowbirds, north, south, depending upon what the season. And there's been an airline story in the news the past couple of days, and it's a well-known airline, Southwest Airline, and they've adjusted some policies here. And basically, the upshot of this story is that under Southwest's new policy, it would force larger passengers to buy two seats in advance, depending upon if they want to go somewhere, whether or not they fit into one seat. You know, you hear this and you say, well, wait a minute, can somebody sue here? Is this now a trend in the airline business? What's the dividing line between one seat or two? Interesting stuff here. Joining us right now is Parag Amin, the founder of the Law Office of Parag Amin, business expert and attorney who deals in business issues, large and small. Parag, it's Paul here at WICC in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. We know you're busy out there on the West Coast. So what are your thoughts on this? And Parag, I had a couple of people over the past few days. Well, geez, does that mean overweight people can now sue because they're being forced to spend more money? What are the legalities here involved?
Well, it's an interesting proposition, Paul, because on the one hand, Southwest has to balance customers, comfort on their airline, along with the legal rights that larger people have. And so, you know, by and large, being obese or being large is not considered to be a protected class absent certain jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Washington has some laws around it. Michigan has some laws around it. D.C. has some laws around it. But it's generally not recognized as a protected class. So there are some arguments, though, despite that, to be made, such as, for example, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, to see if that or to argue that this is discriminatory and a violation of the ADA. And the Americans with Disabilities Act comes with attorney's fees. And so Southwest should be prepared for some aspect or level of litigation from this decision, which is divisive. I mean, look, people on the one hand want to be comfortable in their own seats. On the other hand, larger passengers may balk at the idea of having to buy two tickets to be able to fly somewhere.
What about Parag? There's got to be some safety issues here, too, I'm sure. Do you think, for example, would an attorney for Southwest, Parag, say, well, wait a minute, though, we have to look at worst-case scenarios, right, of maybe a larger person having to move freely and get off the airplane in an emergency, and if they're, in a sense, stuck in one seat, that could be a problem for our flight attendants. Would you anticipate those kind of arguments being used if this ever got to court?
100%, Paul. You're absolutely right. So some of the best arguments on Southwest side is, look, this is not a discriminatory policy. This is applied uniformly throughout for everybody. And this is a policy of both comfort and safety. And there's a lot of arguments to be made relating to safety, including in the event of an emergency evacuation, somebody being able or needing to be able to move freely and potentially quickly without being stuck in a seat. And it allows for that. There may be other restrictions, including, for example, emergency row exits. So there's certainly arguments to be made on Southwest's side. But one of the issues with litigation is that when you don't have something that's clear cut and clearly a violation of law versus not, it does invite some aspect of litigation, especially when the law, such as the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is a federal law, allows for attorney's fees. So I have zero doubt that it is going to invite some level of litigation, particularly in some of these states that also have additional restrictions relating to arguably discriminating against somebody based on their weight, because they do consider weight a protected class, even though, again, it is not generally recognized as a protected class at the national level.
Yeah, Parag, interesting. In a few more minutes here with Parag Amin, West Coast attorney, attorney and business expert here. Parag, we all know that there is, for example, a law of the seas. In other words, those of us who've been on boats, who've been on cruise lines, you know, you hear that once the, you know, a ship is in international waters, you know, the captain pretty much has purvey as to what's going on with restraining unruly passengers and things like that. Do you anticipate maybe Southwest would, or you tell me if there's any precedent of saying, hey, this is being done because you're not just walking around or sitting in a park. You're in a passenger airplane, which is once it's airborne, there's a whole different aspect of, and Parag, I don't know if there's aeronautical law or stuff like this, but does any of that, do you think, bear into this?
Well, with cruise liners and those kinds of things, you're referring to maritime law, which is a unique and different aspect of law. And there's a lot of interplay between what is going on with cruise liners, for example, which flag do they fly? So each cruise liner and their ships have a certain flag that they fly, meaning what country are they kind of domiciled in, those cruise liners?
Yeah.
And where did the incident occur? So there is often a complex interplay between maritime law along with the laws of the country in which they're domiciled. But this is a little bit different because you're talking about a domestic airline carrier, mm-hmm. Southwest Airlines, and there are national laws that largely regulate these. And so really, largely, it is a matter of federal law because there's an aspect of federal preemption. And what that means is if there is a law on a certain aspect at the federal level, it preempts state laws on that very issue. And the whole purpose of it is to help avoid each of the 50 states creating laws that conflict with federal law. So for the purposes of unity and easier regulation, there is federal preemption. But to the extent that the law at the federal level doesn't regulate something, or that there's an aspect of state law that doesn't directly conflict with federal law, mm-hmm. states are allowed to then be able to regulate to a certain extent as well. So generally speaking, I think that there will be a good argument to be made on Southwest's side that there would be federal preemption in terms of anybody trying to bring claims under state law, including, for example, if it's intrastate, meaning like within the state, type flight, because still, even though that one leg of the flight may be flying within the one state, there's the possibility of interstate travel. And so as a result of that, there is Supreme Court precedent that can then be held to be interstate commerce, such that federal law should apply and rather than having state law apply. So I think that this will create, at least in the near term, some questions relating to whether somebody can properly bring a suit or a claim. Wow. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that Southwest has said that they will have these passengers buy two tickets. And to the extent that the flight is not sold out, that they'll refund one of those two tickets. So Southwest is trying to make some amends here, or trying to make some efforts to accommodate these individuals who may be on the larger size and may be required to buy two seats.
Safe to say, Parag, a lot of interoffice emails going in the legal department of the Southwest. Would you say that?
That's right. And you know, I know that Southwest wants to let everybody know that it's all love, but you know, part of that is a give and take, as we all know when it comes to love. And so I think that's the challenge that Southwest is facing, that individuals who are in the adjacent seats to larger individuals also having the safety and comfort. And that's really where this comes from, is wanting to accommodate and trying to deal with everybody. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where this goes, because also similarly, Southwest has done away with its free bags policy.
So
you know, as it relates to extra weight, I mean, it's remarkable, Paul, when you do the research on how much extra weight, even an extra 10 pounds on a flight costs to fly it across the country.
Absolutely. Great stuff. Great analysis. Check out his website, folks, Law, P
PLA.com, lawPLA.com. Parag Amin. Parag, thank you. We appreciate the time, sir. Good luck, and we'll chat down the road, I know. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Appreciate it. There you go. All right, there you go. Yeah, the merit with those numbers, I can't take it. I'll be fine. New numbers on the merit, new numbers on 84, new numbers on 91. No. My home exit was exit 59 in the Westfield section of New Haven. I passed it the other day. It's like exit 20-something. I know why they're doing it. You don't have to wag your finger at me. Well, that's because it's got to match the mileage. I know it. They're destroying a piece of my childhood. That's what they're doing. Megan Portfolio's here. Maybe she'll make me feel better. Tell me it's going to get better, Megan. Please tell me it'll be all right. Will you do that?
My colleague Andy Fowler on yesterday, and it's not going to get much better.
No, there's no fun. There's no fun.
No fun in Connecticut, and now we have new numbers to learn. Because us old people used to go by exit numbers, because you know, like in the old days before GPS, we had maps and. And I'd have to go to my friend's house. Oh, what exit are you?
What exit are you? It was easy, right? Okay, take a ride. How did we survive, Megan?
I don't know.
Without GPS,
barely, though.
Oh my God, I don't mind that. Oh my God. So you have a piece, your latest piece. Check it out, folks. The Hartford Portfolio Blog, the Yankee Institute. I guess, Megan, there are some people that aren't so convinced that some people will stop using the tragedy in Waterbury to go after homeschoolers here. What's up with that?
Yeah, this was actually I really enjoyed this piece. I had spoke to some homeschool advocates earlier in the week. There was a town hall up in Holland, and I was curious. And nerds like me like to go to town halls in our evening.
No, you're involved. You're not a nerd. You care. So go ahead. Continue.
And I was just very interested, and I got to talk to a bunch of these homeschool families, and they were exactly what they thought they were. They were just families that wanted to be more in charge of their education, and some had issues with the private schools or public school. It was a whole slew of reasons, but they were like totally normal people. And then I started digging into it a little bit, and then an attorney reached out to me.
Yeah.
There's like this secret war on homeschooling coming from our state. It's actually kind of creepy. So it all stems back. I mean, I don't know how far back it's gone. That's going to be another piece of mine in the future because I'm so fascinated with this. But we all know about the Waterbury case.
Sure, horrible case.
Absolute horrible. And it was an absolute failure on our government and the government agencies all around. And so what does the state do? They come up with this report that they put out because, you know, we need to know what's happening and we need to make sure this doesn't happen again. Mm. And this report has all this data in there. And the conclusion was essentially homeschool bad and that we need to regulate them more. Never mind the fact that the agencies that were involved, notably DCF, they had their own audit. You know, the state auditors, you know, randomly audit the different agencies. And there's no mention of how to, like, deal with DCF. There was about 18 findings in the audit. It was like 44 pages long. That's a long audit. Like an audit came out today on the paid family medical leave. It was like 5 pages and there were no findings. They were operating, you know, they were in compliance.
Good.
But DCF had missing children. They had instances where they weren't reporting abuse to the appropriate authorities. So you would think that this report that the Office of Child Advocates put out after the Waterbury case would include all of these things to, like, we need to do something about DCF because we can't have kids just missing.
We
can't have abused children missing. I mean, like, opens up like a whole sort of hell for these kids, human trafficking, death. It's terrible. So nothing in this report is actually going down to the root cause. All it does is attack the homeschool community who's been operating, you know, just fine. But this law firm that I was talking to actually took this report that OCA put out and sent it over to Yale, to UConn, and to UC Santa Barbara, to some statisticians. And they're like, yeah, this is nice, but these are just random numbers, and this should not be used for, like,
interesting.
Anything.
Wow.
There is no hypothesis that was tested. There was no control group. Mm. There were no variables isolated. It's essentially the state is using this report that they're going to use to make legislation to make life miserable.
Well, look, we know, Megan, and of course the guest is Megan Portfolio. We know that the teachers unions and the education, they hate homeschooling because they see it as money they don't get their hands on. They despise homeschool, and they come right out and say it. They don't care. They say it.
The teachers' unions hate any form of education outside of public school, and they really hate homeschool because they're not counted in enrollment, so that's less money for them. It's all about money, and it's sad because here you have these families that are doing the best they can. You know, sometimes it's one parent is working because the other's homeschooling, and they're doing a fantastic job with these kids. Time and time again, they do studies that show these kids are like more prepared for college.
Yeah.
They're graduating college. They're successful in whatever career path they go on. Am I saying 100% of the time it's perfect? No, but nothing is. But it's like, it's almost as if the state knows that their agencies are failing families and children, and they need to cover it up and then go after the homeschool.
I have an idea. How about we fix, Megan, how many decades, and this is nothing against overworked caseworkers, how about we fix DCF? I've been in the radio news business and radio in general now for 42 years. I can remember my first news job 35 years ago, doing story after story about what at that time, and I think it's gotten a little better, but sometimes what a train wreck DCF is.
Oh, it is a train wreck, and for a whole slew of reasons, and a lot of it comes from management. I mean, this is anecdotal, but I mean, I had a girl at my gym.
Yeah.
Licensed social worker, has worked in social work, was looking for a job.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why don't you apply for the state? They're always crying that they need people. She's like, I did 6 months ago. I haven't heard anything. Like, how do you, you can't expect someone who's looking for a job to sit around and wait for you to finally decide that you're ready to hire. No, she's going to go and find another job.
Well, you know why she's still waiting? They're checking to make sure she's not a Republican. That's.
Well, I don't know if that's actually on the job application.
I'm just kidding. Megan Portfolio, once again, the guest. Check it out. The state's war on homeschooling rests on bad data. Megan, thanks. Have a wonderful rest of the week.
Thanks,
and enjoy the gym, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks. All right, there you go.